Hi, it's me, Kirsty, and a bunch of you have asked me to do these greetings, and I always do what you ask me to do. Oh, I just had a new baby, by the way. I know I'm a little old for a new kid, but congratulations to me, I'd say. Anyway, if you want something funny or you want something sincere, I would really try to be sincere, but you know, like sort of like, hi, I love you, or you know, Merry Christmas, or I want a divorce. Whatever you need, I'll deliver. Peace out.
On September 8th, 2022, Kirsty Alley, the actress whose breakout role is Rebecca Howe on the long-running television sitcom Cheers, launched a film career that spans several decades, took to Instagram to make an announcement to her fans that she was joining Cameo, the wildly successful app designed to give celebrities an opportunity to send personalized messages and greetings to their fans for a fee. Now in her early 70s, Ally looked fit and healthy with beautiful shoulder-length light brown hair, her trademark raspy voice, and the same vigor and comic timing that put her on the map back in the late 80s. It was vintage Kirsty, cracking jokes about delivering every message from Merry Christmas to I Want a Divorce, and had the zany madcap energy fans had come to expect from her countless shows and movies over the years. And perhaps most importantly, the short video was a bit of a reintroduction to the mainstream after a series of right-leaning political stances, outspoken statements on various topics, and close affiliation with the Church of Scientology made her a bit of a lightning rod for controversy in Hollywood. In April 2016, after critical statements about Hillary Clinton, Ally expressed her support for Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani on social media, although she ended up retracting the endorsement just a few months later in October after the infamous Access Hollywood video came out and revealed a lewd conversation between Trump and Billy Bush. A frustrated Ally tweeted just a day after the tape came out, quote, I hate this election, and I'm officially no longer endorsing either candidate. But in the minds of many people, the damage had been done. Ally had never shied away from controversy during her heyday and had never been quiet about her beliefs, regardless of how unorthodox or outside the mainstream they might be. Although raised a Methodist, she joined the Church of Scientology in 1979 and brought a particular fervor and zeal to the religion after she credited its teachings with helping her overcome an addiction to cocaine. Like Tom Cruise, she attained very high levels within the organization and touted its virtues publicly and unapologetically, saying, quote, Scientology made me a lot stronger and tougher. It's made me more honest and more willing to take responsibility for other people. And beyond proselytizing and defending the religion from its detractors, she also reportedly donated around $5 million to the church in 2007 alone. And remarkably enough, Ally weathered the storm of controversy and seemed to come out the other side, using the same brassy charm and candor that got her famous in the first place. She always maintained a relatability despite the glitz and glamour of her Hollywood lifestyle that truly endeared her to fans. This quality was perhaps best evidenced by her highly publicized battles with maintaining a healthy body weight. By around 2003, Ally started appearing noticeably heavier in public, attributing the weight gain to her struggles with compulsive eating. Rather than retreat to her mansion and isolate herself completely as other celebrities have done over the years, think of Marlon Brando pulling back from the public as he added pounds, Kirsty chose a more Oprah-esque path of openly addressing the issue and becoming a spokeswoman for Jenny Craig. Between 2004 and 2007, Ally lost around 75 pounds and famously appeared in ads for the weight loss company showing off her newly svelte figure. By 2009, however, she'd regained around 83 pounds and got up to nearly 230 pounds. And although the yo-yo dieting undoubtedly had a negative impact on her health, it also made her someone people could relate to on a personal level, sharing her highs and lows on what must have been a most difficult journey to navigate in the image-obsessed world of Hollywood. Which is why her appearance on social media in September engendered such a warm response. Just seeing Ally looking vibrant, healthy, and even youthful caused a flood of positive emotions about someone who was once one of the most reliable leading ladies on the big and small screen, with her blend of feisty wit and stunning beauty. Just 3 months later, Ally would pass away from stage 4 colon cancer in her home in Clearwater, Florida, on December 5th, 2022. Kirsty Ally was just 71 years old. I'm Derek Kaufman.
I'm Jason Beckerman.
And this is Last Days, Kirsty Ally.
The unexpected news of Kirsty Alley's death sent shockwaves through Hollywood as everyone scrambled to make sense of how a seemingly healthy 71-year-old woman, who seemed to be in good health just 3 short months earlier, suddenly passed away. In the ensuing days, statements from family members and other loved ones started to shed some light on what had happened. Alley's 2 children, True and Lily Parker, told news outlets that Ali had, quote, only recently been diagnosed with the cancer that took her life, adding that she'd been, quote, surrounded by her closest family and fought with great strength, leaving us with the certainty of her never-ending joy of living and whatever adventures lie ahead. They also thanked Ali's incredible team of doctors and nurses at the Moffitt Cancer Center. It turns out that Ali's colorectal cancer had been discovered too late to be treated effectively with radiation and chemotherapy. By the time it was discovered, the cancer had advanced to stage 4, which means it had metastasized and spread from where it started to another bodily organ. At this point, the cancer is effectively untreatable, and many doctors move to pain management and hospice care. Colon cancer is the third most common cancer in the world after lung and breast cancer, and although women are at a slightly lower risk than men, approximately 1 in 25, or 4%, will be diagnosed with the disease during their lifetime, and about 90% of cases occur in people over the age of 50. Early detection is, of course, key with colon cancer, leading the American Cancer Society to recommend that adults 45 and older get regular cancer screenings through colonoscopies or stool analyses. And family history plays a huge role. About 25% of people diagnosed with the disease have a family history and should begin screening even earlier in their lives.
As news of Ali's death spread, many colleagues and co-stars over her multi-decade career shared tributes to the late actress. John Travolta, who was also a member of the Church of Scientology and had starred with Ali in the wildly popular Look Who's Talking family comedy movies, shared an old photo of Ali with the caption, quote, "Kirstie was one of the most special relationships I've ever had. I love you, Kirstie. I know we will see each other again." The timing for Travolta was particularly painful. He had just lost his Grease co-star Olivia Newton-John to breast cancer just months earlier in August 2022. Ted Danson, who played opposite Ali's character on Cheers, recalled an episode from the show that still left him in awe of Ali's talents. Quote, "It was the episode where Tom Berenger proposes to Kirstie, who keeps saying no, even though she desperately wants to say yes. Kirstie was truly brilliant in it. Her ability to play a woman on the verge of a nervous breakdown was both moving and hysterically funny. She made me laugh 30 years ago when she shot that scene, and she made me laugh today just as hard." And, you know, Jason, Ted Danson, that's high praise. He's one of the kings of sitcom television in history with Cheers, Becker, and a host of other shows.
So let me just jump in here with what she meant to me when she came across with Cheers. We'll obviously talk about her legacy and her involvement in Cheers a little bit more. But got to remember, Cheers, when she came along, was the number one rated show in the world. As Shelley Long had been playing Sam Malone, Ted Danson's love interest, throughout those years. So Kirstie Alley comes along, and everybody is going to dislike the actress because it's different.
Yeah,
right?
She's replacing one of the most beloved characters in television. Sam and Diane was like a known thing.
Right. It was much like Ross and Rachel for a different generation.
Yes.
Will they, won't they? And then they were dating for a while, whatever. So Shelley Long, for whatever acting struggles, you know, and contract battles she had, she leaves the show. Kirstie Alley comes along, and she's different, and she plays a different character. She won over the audiences. It's a remarkable feat. I was the perfect age. I was a teenager when it happened, and I was obsessed with the show. You know, that back then you had to tune in at Thursdays at a very particular time in order to see Cheers on. And it was, you know, appointment viewing for tens of millions of Americans. And it was water cooler talk the next morning. You know, this is a different time, right? When everybody watched the same show at the same time and you all talked about it the next day. Because if you didn't see it that day, you had to wait until the reruns happened in the summer.
That's right.
And so everybody talked about it. And it was remarkable that she overcame the odds against her to be liked by the audience. And she was beloved almost as much as Shelley Long had been before her.
We'll talk about it a bit. It's a cliche that when you add characters to beloved sitcoms, it doesn't work. There's a lot of examples of the Brady Bunch adding Cousin Oliver and things like that, where it just doesn't work and you can't recapture the magic.
I didn't know if you were going to say that worked or didn't work. Cousin Oliver was a disaster.
Disaster, right? But so adding someone or replacing a beloved character is difficult stuff. And she hit it out of the park, and that's what made Kirstie Alley very, very special in Hollywood, is she was able to just hit her marks and keep the show moving along, and it was popular for a number of years with her. Rhea Perlman, who played Carla Tortelli on Cheers, said, quote, "Kirstie was a unique and wonderful person and friend. Her joy of being was boundless. We became friends almost instantly when she joined the cast of Cheers. She had massive Halloween and Easter parties and invited the entire crew of the show and their families. She wanted everyone to feel included. She loved her children deeply. I've never met anyone remotely like her, and I feel so thankful to have known her. I'm going to miss her very, very much." And what's noticeably absent when you read and listen to the tributes was any of the controversy that swirled around Ali during the last decade of her life. Comments about Kirstie's warm and positive attributes, the parties at her home for the Cheers cast and crew, her deep love and affection for her children, the talent on screen, came just rushing out of people as they grieved the sudden loss of this truly unique star. And all that negative stuff, Jason, just seemed to melt away. I remember experiencing it in the newsroom. And, you know, I thought of Kirstie Alley late in her life as kind of a joke. I'll be honest. She was so right-leaning. She was not really adapting very well.
Really, you know, people were learning about Scientology and they've learned about it. And Kirstie Alley was sort of painted with a negative brush because of it, which is unfair, right? Everybody's got their religion and their faiths.
That's right.
Totally unfair. But nevertheless, it's there.
Some of that brashness was sort of tin-eared in the modern era. You could get away with it as sort of feisty. And in sort of the 2000s, it became like, whoa, let's think about what we're saying before we speak. And yet, so a full understanding of someone as complex as Kirstie Alley really does demand a more thorough look at her career and public persona through the years. So let's go ahead and take a quick break now, and we'll have more on the legacy of Kirstie Alley when we come back.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, and Walmart, and even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. So download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
Kirstie Alley's career can really be best divided into two major periods, both before and then after Cheers. Prior to nabbing the role on the beloved and critically acclaimed sitcom in 1987, Alley was scuffling through Hollywood after dropping out of Kansas State University and moving to L.A. to pursue Scientology and a career in interior design. There's an old clip of Kirstie during an appearance as a contestant on Match Game from this early period.
Okay. Here we go for the big money now, Kirstie. The Super Match. We polled a studio audience not too long ago and said, write down your best answer to this. Someone to blank. Remember, it's $500 for matching their most popular, $250 for the second most popular, and then $100 for the third.
She went on to win about $6,000. Not bad money for the mid-80s, right?
Yeah.
She showed herself off to be whip smart and cool under pressure. But what stands out about this clip is how self-possessed she seems interacting with all the B and C list celebrities on the dais. She's clearly an eye-catching presence with luxurious long brown hair and striking green eyes. If you haven't seen this clip or seen her back in the day, she's stunning.
It looks like a star.
She's really gorgeous, yeah. It just seems like someone that has that star quality. She really has sort of a glint in her eye that's a little bit different than your average, you know,
a game show
contestant, right? From there, she'd get her big film break in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Yes, of course, the most enduring moment of the film is easily when William Shatner screams, Khan.
Scream it for me.
I'm not going to do it. Khan! But Kirstie's role as Vulcan Starfleet officer Lieutenant Savick is really impressive. Here she is speaking flawless Vulcan to Leonard Nimoy. How do we know that's perfect Vulcan?
Because Trekkies study Vulcan.
Do they?
She speaks it with the perfect Vulcan tongue.
We're going to move forward the podcast now. For those Trekkies out there, the Savick character became a hugely popular part of the series, but Alley never did reprise the role. It was recast with Robin Curtis for the sequels. Kirstie was undeniably a captivating screen presence, but she bounced around in smaller projects like the recurring role in ABC's show Masquerade in the early 80s and the romantic love interest of Mark Harmon in 1987's Summer School. Alley's role in Summer School finally gave her an opportunity to show off her comedic chops, and the Carl Reiner flick was actually a sleeper hit at the box office, bringing in around $36 million on a tiny budget and becoming a bit of a cult classic in later years. And the success of the film and Alley's performance likely paved the way, or maybe sealed the deal for her, becoming tapped to replace Shelley Long on NBC's smash hit sitcom about a bunch of barflies in Boston.
And in order to fully appreciate the arrival of Kirstie Alley, as Jason was talking about, on season 6 of Cheers, you have to really understand how seismic this shift was for one of the most beloved shows in television history. Many popular shows add characters, I've mentioned them over time, to freshen things up when a show is getting a little bit stale after maybe the fifth or sixth season. You've had disastrous consequences with Cousin Oliver on The Brady Bunch. There's a character famously named Billy on Who's the Boss, who just once Samantha, who was Alyssa Milano, and the other kids start losing some of their cute factor, you try to throw in another cute character.
We saw that in Modern Family more recently.
Modern Family, good
worked.
Example.
They marginalized that character a little bit, but he was actually a really cute kid. It sort of worked in that show. But I think more often than not, it doesn't work.
It's just difficult. People develop these parasocial relationships with the characters that they know from these shows, and to add someone new feels cheap. You can feel the producers trying to hold on to some
magic. But here it's interesting. So you have like a situation like with Roseanne, where the older sister, Becky, I believe it is, is replaced just with a different actor, and like they make it a
Viv on Fresh Prince.
Here it's sort of an in-between. Yes, she was a different character, but she played the same role, which is Sam's love interest.
Right.
And so there was a direct comparison with Shelley Long. And frankly, I think she did well by comparison.
Yeah, it's a huge shadow. And, you know, the on-again, off-again romantic relationship between Sam Malone, played by Ted Danson, and Diane Chambers, played by Shelley Long, was really the emotional heartbeat of the show for the first five seasons. The cast of regulars, we think of Cheers now, you think of Cliff Clavin and Carla Tortelli and Fraser Crane. They were really the comic relief of the show, but viewers were coming back week in and week out to follow the travails of Sam and Diane. So Shelley Long deciding to leave the show in 1987 prompted producers to write her out of the show by having her character depart for a film career in California, but she's just gone. And so the viewers were left with, well, what are we going to watch Sam do in this show now? Because that love interest was so central. So the stakes are very high when Kirstie was cast as Rebecca Howe, who was a manager for the corporation that buys the bar, who eventually sticks around after Sam regains ownership of the place. Cheers co-creator James Burrows said, quote, "There was a lot of pressure being the new kid in school, especially when replacing one of the most popular characters in television at the time, but Kirstie pulled it off." The crackling and feisty romantic chemistry between Allie and Danson was very different than the more cerebral Sam and Diane chemistry. And over the course of her seasons, Allie would play the part like a strong businesswoman of the 80s who becomes increasingly neurotic, insecure, and sexually frustrated as she navigates relationships with rich men who constantly let her down. And there's a real depth to the character that sets it apart from just another joke-delivering cog in this sort of sitcom machine. And Burroughs has said that once they found the, quote, frailty and vulnerability in Allie's performance, it really just all started to click. Danson himself put it this way. He said, "Kirstie's ability to play a woman on the verge of a nervous breakdown was both moving and hysterically funny."
"Lighten up a little bit. I mean, you got to make some compromises."
"I see. You want me to hang your picture back out?"
"Right."
"Done."
Whoa, that was easy. Wait, let's try some more compromises here. I want to sleep with you 25 times, but you don't want to sleep with me at all, am I right?"
"Right."
"Okay, so what's half of 25?
"Your IQ."
And that's why it worked for the final six seasons of the show. You'll notice she was actually on the show longer than Shelley Long. And her reign as the love interest actually exceeded what originally made the show so magical. And I think people often forget that. It's sort of a record, I would say, in Hollywood, not an official one, but for someone to come in and exceed what made the show magical.
She exceeded not just in years, but honestly in the indelibility of the character. She became a bigger character than Diane had ever been. Now, part of that is because the show, right when Shelley Long left, the show was really hitting its stride, and it kept that stride. The next few seasons of Cheers are the best. It's great. And so she was the beneficiary of that.
Sure.
But nevertheless, she was great, and she was sort of, you know, like I said earlier, she just stepped into this role with aplomb and made us kind of forget about Shelley Long, which I'm sure drove Shelley Long.
I would imagine. I think a lot of people my age think of Cheers as a Kirstie Alley, Ted Danson show.
Yeah.
I remember it that way because I was too young for those Shelley Long years, and I really remember the Kirstie Alley years. The show gets 5 Emmy nominations during her run of 6 seasons. It gets 1 win, and it continues just to rack up these huge ratings and critical acclaim. And to this day, there's these spirited debates that you'll hear people have about which Cheers is actually better. I think Jason would probably fall on the side of the Shelley Long years. That was the magical first run. For me, it's the Kirstie Alley years.
Yeah, despite what I've said, I still have fond memories when I was a little kid of watching the first few years. Yeah, you also had Coach.
You're not that young.
Woody Harrelson.
You're like an adolescent.
Right. Woody Harrelson replaced Coach, who was another legend. About the same time Coach died, the character played Coach died.
Very early.
Woody Harrelson, who then goes on to obviously enormous stardom, almost approaching Ted Danson's role.
He's up there, right? Movie star.
You know, he replaced Coach. So I have fondness for the early years, but as a character and an actress, I go Kirstie Alley.
Yeah, and the big takeaway is during this run on Cheers, Kirstie Alley goes on to become a genuine A-lister for a period of time, cashing in on the sitcom's enormous success to land starring role in a huge franchise called Look Who's Talking. And in all honesty, this was one of my favorite films of the time. It hit me at the right age. It features the voice work of Bruce Willis as a running monologue of baby Mikey's thoughts as his mother navigates a new relationship with the cab driver who rushes her to the hospital to deliver the baby. And the cab driver is played by John Travolta.
Look, you gotta use Lamaze. It works. My sister-in-law used it. You don't use drugs, and it's better for the kid.
You know, the only people who say stupid things like that are men because they're idiots.
Do you want me to call your husband when we get to the hospital?
I don't have a husband.
How about your boyfriend?
Look, if you have to know my life history, I was artificially inseminated.
What are you, lesbo?
I'm melting wax.
The movie's silly, but the performances of Travolta and Ali are so winning that it just really works. The movie just works. It brings in $297 million on a $7.5 million budget.
Those percentages...
It's astronomical.
They blow away Avengers Endgame.
That's right.
In terms of percentages of investment, the ROI on the investment. It's just...
It's insane. A $300 million comedy with a talking baby.
That's right.
It's
on a
remarkable.
$7.5 million budget. And by the way, something we don't talk about, that saved John Travolta. John Travolta was a non-entity. And
he was a has-been by that point.
He was a full has-been. He had done Saturday Night Fever back in the day. He had done, Welcome Back, Kotter back in the
Grease,
day. Grease. And then he's got this long dry period, and he is saved by Look Who's Talking, which then leads to Pulp Fiction, and he becomes a megastar again. But it was a long decade, and that movie saved John Travolta. A little aside about John Travolta there. Ali was such a genuinely bankable star that she parlayed her film and television success into another successful sitcom called Veronica's Closet, which ran for 3 seasons in the late 90s, not to mention lucrative endorsement deals with Pier 1 Imports and Jenny Craig. Before the controversies around her political statements, Kirstie Alley was in the conversation as one of the so-called America's sweethearts with the likes of Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts, although she offered a slightly spunkier and sarcastic energy given her run on Cheers. And it was that same spunky energy and confidence in her own beliefs that would occasionally lead her astray. She declined to participate in any episodes of the wildly successful Cheers spinoff Frasier because the series centered on the field of medical psychiatry, which conflicted with the teachings of Scientology. And as mentioned before, her support of Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential election alienated her from many of her peers in famously left-leaning Hollywood. But Ali was never completely ostracized. She continued to pop up on shows like Dancing with the Stars and The Masked Singer because it was just something undeniably charming and alluring about her presence on screen. Her 2005 work on the Showtime series Fat Actress, in which she played a fictionalized version of herself as an older actress struggling with her weight in an image-obsessed industry, was genuinely groundbreaking and started a lot of important conversations about the shallowness of Hollywood.
You're doing a woo film?
Yeah.
I want to work for Woo. John, isn't there something for me in it?
No.
Anything?
You gotta stop this, Kirstie.
Oh, God, John, we gotta work together. Didn't we have fun? Let's do Look Who's Talking For. Come on.
Oh, please.
Well, we haven't explored all the possibilities. I mean, we've never had talking cats.
But she was never preachy or overly sensitive about the topic. Ali always maintained a certain matter-of-factness that was refreshing and relatable to her fans, who never really abandoned her throughout her career and various missteps.
And like many of the most fascinating people in Hollywood history, Kirstie Alley was a complicated star. At once stunningly beautiful, immensely talented, charming, witty, and rife with controversial opinions and unapologetic stances on many issues that confront all people during our lives. It would not be fair to call her misunderstood or soften the coarser parts of her image in any simplistic manner like that. She was hyper-articulate and plenty smart enough to express her views and had the courage and fortitude to stand by them when the criticisms came flooding in. And yet news of her death was met with the warmth and sadness of a dearly departed friend, even if she offended some during her lifetime. The memories of her generous spirit and infectious laugh are what seem to remain in people's minds. And so I wanted to end with a clip that shows that side of Kirstie Alley and let her have the final word.
The first film, you know, we just had met each other and we were playing. Sometimes you get into your role, you know. Yeah. We're playing two people that fall in love, and John and I were real tentative with each other and sort of coy and flirty and like, oh, good morning, John. I was always looking, you know, usually you come on the set and you look like a dog. But, you know, if you sort of are flirty with someone, you sort of look good before you get there, you know.
Wow.
So they don't know how you really look.
Mm-hmm.
And on the second movie, I noticed with John and I, we'd come in and we looked like hell. And the second movie, John and I were playing husband and wife, and
right.
Now we're sort of bickering. And we sort of, when they would say cut, John and I would still be.
No, honestly, I don't think I care about Kirstie as much as I do anybody.